Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. And I am here with my co-host, Alfred Addisk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Monday, October 19th, 2015. Good afternoon, Al.
Hi, Melody.
Oh, it's been an interesting day in the markets. A little pressure for gold today. Currently, the New York spot price down 760 at 1171.10. You have silver down 21 at $15.92. Platinum is down 3 at 101.5, along with palladium down 11 at $688. The USDX today is up 0.23 at 94.96. Crude oil is down 121. Excuse me, at 46.05, and the paper markets today, I think, were relatively quiet, as they have been on Mondays. You have the Dow up 14 points at 17,230. The NASDAQ was up 18 at 49.05, and the S&P basically unchanged at 2033. 10-year yield up 0.01. at 2.03%, overnight trading and foreign markets were pretty much unchanged. Not a lot of changes, but a lot of interesting, crazy things are going on. You know, we often talk about how the markets are rigged and so forth. And here you have a company. I wonder who made all the money on this deal. Oprah Winfrey joins Weight Watchers. Okay?
Are we making any jokes about that?
No, but we could. But no jokes today.
Okay.
No, I'm being serious.
I just
want
to know the parameters. The subject.
I know. It's.
I mean, she might actually be saving money by buying $60 million as compared to going there every day, whatever that costs her.
Perhaps.
Yeah.
That share is up 104% just with that announcement. Now, you can't tell me, I mean, can you only imagine the money that was made on that today? And an amazing 104% for Weight Watchers after Oprah Winfrey joins the team. So,
well, the presumption is that she's going to advertise it one way or another. I recommend Weight Watchers, and in theory, it's going to increase their growth dramatically.
It's,
I mean, she could sell books
and
so on.
Decrease growth, Al.
No, it's supposed to decrease weight, not growth.
Well, it depends on how you define weight. Mm-hmm. It also can be growth. Yeah. But anyway, U.S. home builders today also, they're feeling more optimistic about the housing market. Their confidence was the highest level in 10 years. And that's the National Association of Home Builders and Wells Fargo Builders Sentiment. It rose this month to 64, up from 61 in September. And the last time it was reading this high was back in October 2005, when it actually read at 68. And, of course, the 50 level.
Which was 2 years. 2 years before we got so deep into the subprime mortgage loans that the whole thing blew up in everybody's face.
And I don't know how anybody could compare 2005 with what's going on in today's world. I mean, they're not even, it's not even close. I mean, you can feel it. People are having a difficult time. But so anything above 50 indicates more builders view sales conditions as good rather than poor. And I guess that's probably because you saw that turnaround in the stock market at least by 1,000 points. Rates aren't going up and so forth. So I guess they felt a little more confident. China, data released today showed that China's economic growth, in the latest quarter is lower. Chinese consumers helped to avert a deeper downturn. The world's second largest economy grew by 6.9% in the 3 months ending in September, down from the previous quarter's 7%, and the slowest since early 2009. So not any
That's exactly what, you know, we went out for dinner this weekend, and we had Chinese food, and that's exactly what they told us in the fortune cookie.
Okay.
The economy was down to 6.9%.
But what's interesting, we talk about the TPP and we forget that there's other trade agreements that are going on at the same time. And everybody kind of loses sight of the other agreements because of the TPP. But this one is just a secret. And this is the BIT. It's a bilateral investment treaty. And they've been working on this one for a decade. And, of course, the progress certainly has accelerated in the past months, along with all the other trade agreements that are going through the White House. It has to be approved by Congress. But if the deal gets done, it's going to roll back technical barriers and investment restrictions that are limiting access to lucrative markets in both countries, the U.S. and China. And, of course, this is similar to an investment chapter of a free trade deal. So again, this deal would have massive impact on U.S. businesses.
What would that impact be?
It's all in trading. You're going to have,
No, what it seems to say is you can buy corporations that were previously you couldn't do that. It implies the way I'm hearing this, it implies that the U.S. will be able to buy corporations in or larger shares of corporations, one or the other, in China, and China will be able to buy U.S. corporations or larger shares in them. And the reason that's interesting to me is who actually has some money that they could use to buy this stuff? Well, the Chinese government is reportedly, they reportedly have quite a lot in their treasury. This would be an opportunity for them to come into the United States and purchase some or all of major U.S. corporations, and who's going to buy the Chinese corporations?
So this is a trade agreement that's being worked on, and this was actually last week, the date on this information. So, it's just another part where the U.S. is being sold out. And you're right. It's not going to benefit the U.S. It's not going to. Mm-hmm. It's going to benefit the multinational corporations. It's going to benefit, those corporations are going to get bigger and bigger and wealthier and wealthier. And if they really believe that China is going to have a transparent regulatory process, these people really don't understand what they're dealing with when it comes to China. And
on top
it's really
of it,
kind of.
Well, you did. We've reported on this in the past. But the premier of China has, we've talked about the idea that it's part of their culture to maintain harmony at any cost, and therefore they are trained from birth to lie. They tell people what they want to hear.
Exactly.
And as a result, the premier of China has complained he doesn't really know how much is going on in the economy because he can't depend on getting honest answers from whoever is running the various provinces. He assumes they're lying. They're telling him what they think he wants to hear. And so he doesn't even know what's going on in the economy. I mean, China is not even transparent to the Chinese. How is it going to be transparent to foreigners? Just isn't going to happen.
It's not going to happen. But in the meantime, they'll be, you know, signing all these contracts and so forth. China will be taking away a lot of these the technical. I don't know what you want to call it. What word am I looking for, Al?
Technical.
Technical.
Uh-huh.
Be looking for all their.
The one that comes right after technical.
That's the one.
It's the one you look right
that's
after
one
that
looking.
One. That will be the one.
It's on my tongue, and I can't see my tongue right now. It's really. But hey, it's all part of the deal. And you know what's funny? Here's the big. Recently, Israel was really upset with the U.S. The relationships between Israel and the U.S. were at odds.
Strained.
Because of the agreement with the Iran nuclear deal. Well, that takes effect. I believe that goes into effect today. And now you have Israel is, of course, now we're here back. We're here for more money. You know, we want our military grants worth to $3 billion plus a year that are due to expire in 2017. We're here to look for an agreement on a 10-year military aid package now that this deal with Iran is through. So we're here now with our hands out. And, it's just...
Pals now?
Now we're pals.
As long as we give people money, then they're our friends.
As long as...
That's how you make friends.
Mm-hmm.
First thing you learn back in kindergarten and whatever, give other children money and then they will love you.
Mm-hmm.
See? That's what we learn.
Mm-hmm. So now they're back to that. And the two sides, the U.S. and Israel, also launched a two-week multinational military exercise known as Blue Flag. It's held twice a year to practice planning and execution of Air Force operations. Things are just so bizarre, Al. There isn't anything that makes sense anymore. There isn't anything that, there isn't a logical order of anything.
You wonder at times, is any of this real, or is it just some sort of facade they put on? They do this little puppet drama. We're so angry at you because you're doing business with Iran, but now we're not angry at you because you're going to do business with us. And I don't know, is any of it real or is it all just facade? You know, and part of the reason I ask that, I talked a little about this with James Corbett, I think, on the program that aired last Thursday. When we talk about things, there are people who guesstimate that there are at least $250 billion worth of derivatives circling the globe, and there might be as many as $2 quadrillion worth of derivatives. And I wonder, how real can any of that be? We don't have $2 quadrillion. Nobody has $2 quadrillion. And people are saying, oh my gosh, the derivatives. The derivatives are the time bomb, the nuclear bomb that'll destroy everything. I'm looking at it at times, and I'm thinking to myself, $2 quadrillion? No one has $2 quadrillion. This is a fiction. It is an illusion. What if we just said, I don't believe in $2 quadrillion worth of derivatives? And if they die, and if they disintegrate, they disintegrate. Who cares? Now, I know it's not that simple, but what I'm trying to get across is that there is so much of the world that has become just an incredible kind of fantasy. We are so far removed from reality, mm-hmm, that you got to wonder sometimes, what is real What do I really need to do to take care of myself? Do I need to pay any attention to all these fantasies and fictions that seem to be increasingly apparent? Or can I just figure out what is real and let's work with that? Tack with the rest of it. I don't care about the derivatives. Burn. See if I care. I know it's not that simple, but it is the kind of idea that I find tempting.
Just think of all the billions of dollars that were made in fees.
I know.
Creating that $quadrillion or that quadrillion
which
derivatives.
Which possibly exist in fact.
Well, that's how you
it only
have,
exists as a kind of promise. It's a this is part of having a debt-based monetary system. People make promises, and other people accept the promises, and then they treat the promises, the resulting debt, as if they are real and they're assets.
But my point is, I look at the billions of dollars that were made while that was being created. Hey, what else can we do? Let's just create another illusion and make another $1 trillion. We'll divide
it
up among.
Yeah. We are selling these illusions to the public. You know, we have seen.
If we did it, Al, we'd be in jail.
Well, yeah, I know. unless we could manage to figure a way to make billions of dollars, then we'd be on the A list. I mean, we'd be invited to all the best and swankiest parties, Molly. If you only make a little bit, though, they'll put you in jail. But what this is, when we talk about $2 quadrillion in derivatives, this in the end is just another variation on the story of a little boy who sees that the emperor is walking around butt naked. Right? He's been sold a bill of goods by his tailor that he's wearing these beautiful invisible clothes. And everybody's going along and says, oh, look at the beautiful invisible clothes on the emperor. He's the, you know, blah, blah, blah. And some kids say, hey, that guy's nude. Well, this is the same kind of story when we start talking about $2 quadrillion worth of derivatives. We might as well be talking about Yosemite Sam or Wile E. Coyote. That isn't real. So I don't know where this all goes, but sooner or later we're going to have to confront the reality that the $1 or $2 quadrillion in derivatives is no more real than a Looney Tune from Warner Brothers or some sort of an animated special from Walt Disney. It ain't real. And yet we are caught up believing in it. It's bizarre, Melody. I mean, it's the sort of thing you look at it and you just shake your head and you say, oh my God. And it's not just a game. It's not just illusory in the sense that some people, if something happens to this illusory $1 or $2 quadrillion worth of derivatives, some people are not merely going to be inconvenienced. People will probably die. Might even see war break out. Hard to say what happens. And yet the whole thing is based on what? Nothing but mere promises to pay. That's what these derivatives are. They're just paper debt instruments. They're promises to pay. They're IOUs in a world where we have so many IOUs they can't all be kept. The whole thing, we are, you know, I start to contemplate and I start, oh my God. You know?
It wouldn't be so devastating to all, you know, and this is just another part of the system. I mean, the whole system is all illusion. It's not real.
And
it's so
what's
far.
The heart of debt-based monetary system?
A fiat currency.
The debt is all promises to pay. That's what debt is, a promise to pay. The whole system is based on promises, and there's more promises than can possibly be kept. It's like, vote for me, and I promise you I'll show you how to flap your arms and fly like Peter Pan. It isn't going to happen. It's not going to happen, and all of our promises, or most of our promises, are false. They can't be kept, and yet here we are in a world based on imaginary promises. Let's take a break for some commercial announcements. Melody and I will be right back on Financial Survival. Please stay tuned.
have a heart condition and emergency rooms and medical doctors are not an option, you need our emergency heart attack kit. 5 concentrated liquid formulas enter the system in 60 seconds to protect your heart muscle, strengthen heartbeat, increase circulation, relieve pain, and make breathing easier. When seconds count, you want all the help you can get with our emergency heart attack kit. Easy to use and portable in a 1-pound compact kit for your purse, briefcase, or car. Call Apothecary Herbs now for your emergency heart attack kit toll free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at www.thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Adusk here on Financial Survival with Melody Cedarstrom, contemplating the insanity, the madness that makes up our world. You know, this place is so strange, and people take it so seriously that sometimes people can get killed over this stuff. I mean, we could have wars based on just promises, idiotic promises that people have made. What's next, Melody?
Well, we're going to talk about Obamacare because this is another one of my pet peeves since I was initially canceled. I was part of those that were canceled and had to go into a different program and so forth.
Didn't they promise that you could keep the program?
They promised I could keep the program, and they promised my rates would not go up.
See, these are the promises I'm talking about.
I could keep the same doctor. Yeah, promises.
Yeah, I know.
Just
they're worthless.
Fat lies.
Yeah, I know.
So the promise was that if you didn't sign up for health insurance, that the IRS, when you found it, they were going to tag you for $95. Well, guess what that fee has jumped to? $695. The sign-up season begins.
What's wrong with these people? Why couldn't they make it an even $700? You know, do they think they're
getting Now that
it's
would
only $695. What a deal.
Yes, what a deal. You know, I'm surprised they didn't do $699. But taxpayer subsidies pay roughly 70% of the monthly premium.
Now, of whose monthly premiums?
Of all these people that sign up that don't have money, they didn't want to sign up because they didn't have enough money to sign up for health coverage. Well, they get 70% of it paid for by taxpayers.
Hmm.
So now they're encouraging these people. They're saying that these people didn't want to pay for the health insurance because they wanted to buy other things, maybe to save money and so forth.
Or maybe so, buy some crack.
Who knows?
Crack, they don't give that stuff away. They don't give that crack away. And if you have to choose between paying for health care and paying for crack, well, that's a tough choice, Melody.
But let me finish. After 2016, the fines will rise with inflation. This is the first time that the IRS collected the penalties, deducting them from the taxpayers' refunds for the 2014 tax year in most of these cases. 7.5 million households paid penalties, totaling $1.5 billion.
Now, wait a second.
Yeah.
They paid penalties when the penalties were 95 bucks.
Actually, well, let me finish. You jumped in too soon. It was an average of $200 apiece. So I don't even know where they came up with the $95 initial well, it was supposed to be $95 or 1% of income. So
maybe
perhaps
it was
that
minimum.
1%, right.
Maybe it was a minimum of 95. And after
well,
that, it's up to the IRS. He could make it up whatever they thought was appropriate.
So you have 7.5 million households paid the penalties totaling $1.5 billion, about $200 apiece. And so they're looking to sign up another 10 million customers this year. And
more money by signing these people up as customers or by fining them $695
probably.
Each? I mean, it turns into be close to $7 billion. I think that's what the math is on it. If they can clip all 10 million of them, don't actually sign up. Just give us $695 each.
But, again, this is another sign. And again, health care costs for those who have insurance is increasing substantially. I mean, I've seen people, their premiums are going, I mean, they're initially paying, you know, like $500. Now it's $1,400 and $1,500.
No.
I mean, the increases are just staggering.
And it's a definite function of insurance because nobody cares about the increase if it doesn't come out of their pocket. And first time I understood this, I've talked about it before, but first time I understood it was at least 20 years ago, maybe 25, I don't recall clearly, when they mandated automobile insurance here in Texas. And prior to that, you could get work done on your car, your truck, whatever. You could get some shade tree mechanic. You could get it done cheap. You could get it done at a price you could afford. But once they mandated insurance, prices for a fender repair and repairing your engine, whatever, they just began to skyrocket. And the reason was nobody cared. As long as I'm insured, I don't care if they charge me $100,000 to put a new license plate on the back end of my car. What do I care? The insurance company's paying for it. And with that mentality, prices went up. We see something like that more recently when they started to make student loans for college kids. And what happened? Who profited from it? It was supposedly that we could have these loans and kids could go to college, but it turns out all the loans did was lay the foundation for raising tuition and raising the salaries of professors and administrators and college endowments and so on. Once you allow that insurance in, you can bet that the prices are going up. We've seen it in, again, automobile insurance here in Texas, and we've seen it with the guarantee with the loans for the essentially insuring these loans for college kids, and now we're going to see it for medical care. You're going to watch the which was supposed to be free medical care. That was the way it was advertised. They would somehow just conjure this stuff out of the netherworld, and we would just have ta-da, free stuff. It isn't even close to being free, and in the end, it's going to cost more than the medical care you had prior to Obamacare, and not a little bit more. I'll bet you at least doubles. I'll bet you that the cost of medical care in this country as a result of Obamacare, I'll bet it doubles compared to what it was before Obamacare. Yeah, and it may be much more than that.
Much more.
Yeah.
Disgusting.
So, what
and
are we
you have? Yeah, and think about, you do have your retirees. I also saw where their Medicare Part B, that's increasing. So you have about 7 million Americans that are looking to see about a increase, not just a little increase. You're talking about 52% for their Medicare Part B premiums.
Mm-hmm.
For people who don't work and have any, it's just things are getting crazy. And it's like, how much are people willing to keep dishing out? You know, and it doesn't seem like, you know, if you have a premium from $104, go up to $160, you know, but when you're living on a particular income, that can be significant and devastating to a lot of people.
Well, especially when you get on in years and you are increasingly inclined to go see the doctor.
Yes.
Now, it's one thing if you visit the doctor. Last time I saw a doctor was, I've seen a doctor twice since I got out of the Army back in 1967. Right?
Well,
two times. All right? And both in-house visits. I mean, in-office visits, that's as far as it went. All right? But at my age, you have to assume there will be more visits in the future. And they will be increasing. What was easy to afford, you know, a couple of times in 40 mm-hmm. years or something like that, now it's going to be more challenging. Yeah. And what you're describing are circumstances where the people that are most vulnerable to medical, who are most likely to need medical care, and in addition to that, among the least able to pay higher prices for medical care are exactly the ones that are going to get stuck with higher prices.
And Congress, they did have a couple of weeks to try to prevent this premium hike, but you know.
Yeah, right.
As
if they're going to forget to prevent a premium hike.
yeah, really.
Yeah, right.
But, I mean, they're too busy doing other things. I mean, they're just getting back from, I don't know, some sort of, so anyway. So again, you know, we talk about, Al, you talk, you know, we talk, well, there's no inflation. We hear all the time there's not enough inflation. But yet everything that all our health care, all just like the Medicare premiums for these people for, you know, 7 million plus, everything is going up.
Yeah.
Everything is going higher and higher. So how high does it go before it?
Well, I don't agree that everything's going up, but things like insurance are going up, at least in the instance of Obamacare, and we can probably point to point to a lot more instances besides that. And what we're talking about is things are going up that serve that top 1%, the government and/or the top 1% in this country. But for people that are working for a living, things are becoming. I mean, the insurance may be going up, but what's happening to food? What's happening to wages? There's a problem here, this income disparity. It's enormous and it's intolerable. It won't be allowed to continue. I've seen where the top, 5% of the country controls about 75% of the wealth in this country, and the bottom 95%, they only control maybe 25% of the wealth in this country altogether. There are people who look at this and they say, well, these people who, the super rich, they're working harder, they're working smarter, they're doing this, they're doing that. It's a bunch of crap, in my opinion. I don't doubt that some people do work harder and they do work smarter, and I have no objection to that and whatever they can make. But most of the reason the super rich stay super rich and get super richer is because they are bribing congressmen and senators with what they call political campaign contributions. They give them money in order to broker laws that legalize them pulling some stunt to take more money from the American people. But one of the consequences, one of the great consequences, this is the flip side of the coin. When we're putting all the wealth in the hands of the top 1%, or at least a vast amount of the wealth goes into the top 10th of a percent, or even a one-tenth of 1%, when we're putting all the wealth up there, where's that wealth coming from? And inevitably, it's coming from the middle class and from the poor. One way or another, they are taking that money, and it's part of the reason why the middle class is disappearing and the poor is getting poorer. Well, we can sit back and if we just look at it, say, oh, they're taking all the money up on top. Well, that doesn't mean there's as much for the people down below. It's not just the people at the other end of the political spectrum, of the economic spectrum. They're not having to get by on less. It's not that simple. They're having to get by on nothing in many instances. Michael Snyder wrote an article just in the last week or 10 days where he pointed out that if you combine the number of people that the government admits that are officially on unemployment And you add that to the remainder of the people who are not officially on unemployment, but they don't have, but they're in the prime working age and don't have jobs. You come up with nearly 103 million people who don't have jobs in this country. This is an absolute direct consequence of income disparity. When you push all the money up to the top, it doesn't just mean that people down at the bottom have less money. It means they have less jobs. We're not going to break, we're not going to really improve the employment rate in this country until somebody does something about the income disparity. There is no money for these people down at the bottom. They don't have jobs. They don't have money. They don't have things. They don't have money to buy things. They, the people that would otherwise might otherwise employ them, they don't have work for them. I mean, these are, and you can't simply deprive people of jobs. I'm, and it's not an easy situation. I'm not advocating that we just make work and, you know, get a government job for these people so they got some place to hang out during the day rather than just staying at home. They can go to some government operation and chill out and whatever. I'm not advocating that, but I'm saying that if you don't have jobs for people, I think you you deprive them of a fundamental basis for hope. It may be a false hope, it may be a vain hope, but hope that they can improve their lot in life. But when you are unemployed, you're not merely impoverished. You're stripped of a kind of hope, you know? You can't hope, gee, if I could save enough, if I stick with this job, I might get a raise, I might get more money, I might be able to buy a new car. No talent. It gives you hope. You don't have a job, where's your hope? Where's your cause for hope? You take people, if it's true that there's 103 million who don't have jobs in this country who might otherwise be expected to have them, if that number is true, those people are going to do something about this. And whether they are going to hide in the bushes and thump rich people on the head in order to rob them, or they're going to support a political revolution, remains, or both, remains to be seen. But you, this is not, I don't care what the rich say. Say, well, we're entitled to our money because we've worked harder and smarter and went to college. Look, you got to bring the rest of the community along with you. And if you're not willing to do that, you can't count on that community to support you the next time you get mugged. There's income disparity has gone too far. And part of the consequences is an enormous rate of unemployment. And if Michael Snyder's numbers are correct, and it's true that we've got 103 million people of working age who don't have jobs, this is perhaps part of the reason why the government tells us, oh, there's only 8 million unemployed right now. They have to lie about it. They can't let you know how big this problem is. Why? Because unemployment is probably the principal driver of most of the political revolutions we've seen or heard about in the last century or so. The French Revolution back around 1780, I don't recall when it was, but in the late 1700s, driven by unemployment to a significant degree. Got Marie Antoinette, and one of the revolutions at least, telling the people that said they want bread, and she said, let them eat cake. Right? She didn't get it. They needed something. They needed jobs. They needed food. They needed money. They couldn't afford bread, and she said, let them eat cake. Well, that blew up in her face before it was done. You had the Bolshevik Revolution in Russia, where most of the wealth was going to the Tsar and the whatever lords and whatever they had in their political and economic structure in Russia. Unemployment fed that revolution. Franklin Delano Roosevelt with the New Deal, all right, which caused a political and economic revolution and really turned this country into a socialist country back in the 1930s. What was that revolution based on? It happened in the midst of the Great Depression. And what was the Great Depression characterized by? High levels of unemployment. What I'm saying is unemployment is conducive to political revolution. And if we're going to continue to have numbers of the sort that Michael Snyder says are true, there's going to be another Franklin Delano Roosevelt in our near future. Let's take a break for some commercials. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. Be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Financial obligations or relationship problems have you feeling stressed out? When life is too much to handle, use Apothecary Herbs' emotional stress formula. Feel calm and more in control with herbs especially combined to provide the organic nutrition your system needs to help you cope. Complete instructions for maximum benefit and a money-back guarantee. You've waited long enough. Call Apothecary Herbs now. Toll free 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188. What's next, Melody?
I just want to remind the listeners we still have a Mint State 64 $20 St. Gaudens, a Mint State 64 $20 St. Gaudens, along with $100 face value of 90% silver. They are quarters, and that total package is $28.80. That includes all your shipping costs, shipping, and insurance. So you receive one Mint State 64 $20 gold piece, a St. Gaudens, and $100 face value of 90% quarters. That means you would get 400 coins, all for the low price of $2,880. Give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com, and make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter. And, of course, you can listen to these programs archived and live right from the website.
I've got an article here that deals with Greece, which is interesting to me. You remember how the story of the Greek bankruptcy and bailout dragged on and on late last year and early this year. In fact, we thought it would never end. Then in July, we haven't heard much about it since July.
Well, they had new elections since.
Yeah, I know. But in the end, what changes? Good news, however. The Greek debt story, for those of you who are concerned that we might never hear about the Greek debt story again, it's alive and well and ongoing. Here are excerpts from an AFP story entitled Greece's Creditors Back in Athens This Week. All right, the creditors are coming to Athens this week to talk about the Greek debt. Greece and its international creditors are due this week to resume talks in Athens over reforms demanded from the debt-ridden government in exchange for bailout funds. Okay? The creditors will give Greece some more money, but Greece has to agree to certain demands. And they're going to resume talks about this. All right? What do we get out of talks, Melody?
Not much.
Get promises. That's what we get. The creditors promise to give the Greeks some more money, and the Greeks agree to give the creditors, I don't know, parts they will privatize, parts of Greece and give it to the creditors. They will work on their pension funds, diminish their pension funds. There's a bunch of things. But it's two sides talking. They say they're talking, they resume talks. What they're really resuming are promises. As we pointed out earlier in the program, these promises, you know, they're perhaps worth the paper they're printed on, but not much more than that, at least in many instances. Greece and the international creditors resume talks over reforms demanded and so on. Hours later, leading union GSEE said it was calling a general strike on November 12th against the measures. So we got the government agreeing to some of these reports. We got the unions saying, workers and unions cannot and must not remain inactive in view of the criminal measures applied now and in the future. This is according to GSEE, which is, again, a Greek union. Negotiators were in Athens late July after Greece agreed with its creditors on a new loan, got more money, promise, and in exchange for painful economic reforms, which the Greek government promised, cross my heart and hope to die, promised they're going to implement. Greece's parliament has since adopted some of the reforms. Most recently, tougher terms for tax evasion and a suppression of early retirement loopholes. A daunting overhaul of the country's struggling pension system is expected next month. Now, how many people believe that Greece is going to be able to do much to its pension system without inciting riots? Anybody? Can I see a show of hands? I don't see any hands. Greece is not going to significantly cut the pensions for Greek workers without, I won't say it's impossible, but it's certainly unlikely that they'll be able to do that without causing riots in Greece. And then it goes on. And the leftist Greek government has pledged to carry out a number of privatizations that it had previously opposed. And they mean by privatizations, well, what they mean by that is the privatization agency TYPED said binding offers for the Piraeus Port Authority, the agency that runs the main Greek harbor's tourism and commercial activity, are expected early in December. What they're going to do is they're going to sell that port authority to some private companies who are associated with the creditors, Greece's creditors, or at least they're going to pay the money, and the money will ultimately help to go back to the creditors. The agency also hopes to conclude talks with German airport operator Fraport for the privatization of Greek regional airports. They're going to give Greek regional airports to foreign countries, foreign investors. You understand that? And you look at that, and I'm going to tell you, they're going to carve Greece up like a Christmas turkey, and a chunk for you, and a chunk for me, and a chunk for all the creditors, and Greece is going to be left with nothing but bones, maybe a little stuffing. Huh? It just isn't going to work, at least not for long, in my opinion. Under the deal, Athens agreed to more public spending cuts in return for a three-year 86 billion euro, that's $96 billion, a European Union bailout. It's third since 2010, which prevented it from crashing out of the eurozone. You know, I said at the time, Greece would be better off. Just take the bankruptcy and be done with it. Follow the example set by little Iceland. They threatened them with all kinds of economic problems, and Iceland just said, stuff it. We're going to file for bankruptcy, and we're not paying the debt. All right? And I don't have a problem. I believe people should pay their debts, but I also believe that creditors should not be setting people up to take advantage of them. Greece has been hustled and conned by the people who have made easy money available to them. These people had made the easy money available. Greece was celebrated like a bunch of drunken college kids. They went out and partied down and partied hardy and the rest of that. They were fools. But the people that loaned them the money were fools too. They enabled the Greeks to play the fool in the same way that I could enable some kids to get drunk and maybe kill themselves in a car wreck by giving them alcohol. Some high school kids or some college kids or whatever. They have enablers. It's people that's recognized that you have addicts have enablers, people who help them maintain their addiction for their own reasons. To some degree, the people loaned money to Greece more than Greece could hope to ever repay. These people were enablers. They helped the Greeks to play the fool. And the Greeks are not to be congratulated or respected for playing the fool, but neither are the creditors who enabled that foolishness. And it's, to me, it's important to take a look at this sort of thing because, guess what? We're at least as much in debt as Greece. Greece's debt as a percentage of its gross national product is, I don't know, it's 90 or 100%, I think. I'm not sure what it is. Our government says we are in debt for a sum comparable to 100, 110% of our gross domestic product. But that's based on the official debt in the United States. And the real debt, according to some sources, including the Congressional Budget Office, including unfunded liabilities, is over $200 trillion. It's not $18 trillion that they talk about. It's over $200 trillion. Right, we're talking 10 times more debt than the government admits. And what that means is sooner or later, we are going to be in a situation analogous to that of Greece. And we're going to have creditors who are going to be screaming that they've got to be paid. All right, and they're going to want to take people's homes and land and corporations and businesses. That's what they're going to want. And they're going to try to convince you and me and everyone else to go along with austerity measures. And they're going to try to convince us that we have to give up our pensions and we have to do all sorts of things in order to make good on our government's debt. Well, when it comes to it, we're going to have to look at that debt very closely. We're going to have to ask ourselves, in my opinion, a couple of questions. And one, is it even possible to pay the existing national debt? And for the United States, it's not possible. We will never pay off the true national debt. It's not going to happen. And then the next question is to ask, how brilliant do you have to be to figure out that the national debt can't be repaid? And if you don't have to be all that smart, you don't really need to be a genius with a PhD and the rest of that sort of thing. If it's something that the average person could figure out if they took the time and looked to see, then what is the moral standing of the creditors who've loaned that money to the United States government? Why didn't they understand that the government could never repay that loan? Why did they continue to lend that money to the government without thinking, hey, wait a second, this thing is getting so, the U.S. is getting so deep in debt, they're not going to pay the loans off. Why didn't they stop? From my perspective, it's at least a question to consider. Are the creditors who loaned money to the United States government, were they just enabling something to take place that was wrong? In the same sense, if I gave money to a crack addict or an alcoholic or whatever, I bought booze for him, bought crack for him. Do I have moral standing? And I say, oh, they really, he's got a terrible addiction. He's got to have alcohol or he just gets a terrible case of the shakes. So I'm buying him another case of beer or a bottle of booze. Am I really helping him? Or shouldn't I just sit back, look, this is going to stop? What is my moral standing as an enabler? What is the moral standing of the creditors of the government of Greece and the creditors of the United States, the government of the United States? Do they have a moral standing where they can really claim a right to put the Greek people now and the American people one day into austerity in order to pay off the debts, the stupid, irrational debts incurred by the government of the United States? I mean, if you're stupid enough to lend money to somebody, some entity who can't pay it back, that's your problem. That's the way the world is. And I think the same thing should be true. I don't regard myself as a surety for the government of the United States. I don't regard myself as being responsible for their debts. And I don't see why I should be, particularly when the government is irresponsible in the amount of debt that it incurs. Not just irresponsible, but irrational. They just said, oh, we'll just keep running it up and leave the debt for Joe Sixpack out there. I think Joe has valid reason when faced with the national debt in Greece or faced with the national debt that we have in the United States. I think Joe Sixpack, I think he's got valid reason to say, heck no, I ain't going to pay. If you're dumb enough to lend money to our idiot government, that's your problem. I'm not going to be surety for this government. They want to behave like a bunch of fools? Let them behave like a bunch of fools. You want to enable them? You want to be their enabler? Be their enabler. Makes a lot. But not me. I'm not going to play that game. Or at least I hope not to play that game. These are questions that to me are raised. We look at Greece. They're still in the news. They're still making promises. The creditors are promising to lend another $96 billion to Greece. Greece is promising they're going to change their pension funds. And I don't remember what all they said in the article, but they're going to impose more austerity on the people to pay off the existing Greece, the existing debt. We have dueling promises in a world where almost none of the promises can be kept. I think if you get that idea, perhaps it'll help you when the day comes when people are saying, look, you've got to pay these promises because they were made by your congressman or your senator. I don't know if we do. And I think it also tells all of us that maybe the smartest thing you can do is stop taking promises. Everybody's given you a promise. I promise to pay you. Not next week, next month, next year. I'll pay you then. Pay you. Promise. Promise. Cross my heart. Maybe you got to start doing business on the basis of, look, I want to be paid now. I don't want your promises, nothing personal, but I don't trust the promises. I want to be paid now. Maybe that would be good advice. We'll watch and see. Melody, we are out of time. Folks, we are out of time. We'll be back tomorrow. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer.
Bye-bye.
All night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me.